Byzantine romances, or even beyond these to the yet elder Greek lineages in the Iliad and the Odyssey. But there is still more reason why it should not do anything of the sort. We may amuse ourselves, if we choose, in tracing resemblances and origins, but after all the heroines of English and American fiction are of easily distinguishable types, and their evolution in their native Anglo-Saxon environment has been in no very great lapse of time singularly uninfluenced from without. They have been responsive at different moments to this ideal and to that, but they have always been English and American, and they have constantly grown more interesting as they have grown more modern. 1. The best thing in the expression of any sort of modernity is a voluntary naturalness, an instructed simplicity. And there is no writer of the present moment, not Mr. Hardy, not Count Tolstoy himself, who is more modern than Defoe in these essentials, though Defoe wrote 250 years ago. But we cannot go back to Defoe in this place any more than we could turn, say, to Monsieur Zola. Defoe is distinctly of the 19th century in the voluntary naturalness and instructed simplicity of his art, but he is no more of the English 19th century tradition or principle or superstition, call it what you will, than Monsieur Zola. He wrote the clearest, purest English, the most lifelike English, and his novels are of a self-evident and most convincing fidelity to life. But he was frankly of the day before we began to dwell in decencies, before women began to read novels so much that the novel had to change the subject, or so limit its discussion that it came to the same thing. Defoe was of a vastly nobler morality than Fielding, and his books are less corrupting. They are not corrupting at all, in fact. They are as well-intentioned as Richardson's, which sometimes deal with experiences far from edifying in order to edify. He is a greater, a more modern artist than either of the others, but because of his matter and not because of his manner or motive, his heroines must remain under lock and key and cannot be so much as named in mixed companies. Defoe's novels cannot be freely read and criticized. Only his immortal romance is open to all comers of every age and sex, and it is a thousand pities that Robinson Crusoe has no heroine. We must not begin to study our heroines of 19th century fiction with him, though aesthetically and ethically 19th century fiction derives from him in some things that are best in it, especially in that voluntary naturalness and instructed simplicity which are the chiefest marks of modernity. We cannot begin 100 years later with the heroines of Samuel Richardson, though one of them at least is as freshly modern as any girl of yesterday or tomorrow, Clarissa Harlowe, in spite of her 18th century costume and keeping, remains a masterpiece in the portraiture of that ever-womanly, which is of all times and places. The form of the novel in which she appears, the epistolary novel, is of all forms the most averse to the apparent unconsciousness so fascinating in a heroine. Yet the cunning of Richardson, it was in some things an unrivaled cunning, triumphs over the form and shows us Clarissa with no more of pose than she would confront herself with in the glass. It is in her own words that she gives herself to our knowledge, but we feel that she gives herself truly and with only the mental reserves that a girl would actually use. There is always some final fact that a girl must withhold. She gives not herself alone, but all her environment, vividly, credibly, convincingly, in the letters she writes. She persuades us that she lives and suffers, and though it is preposterous in the novelist to study her love affair so minutely as he does, it is not preposterous, but most simple and natural, for her to dwell upon it in every detail. It is all the world, the center of the universe to her experience, and however the author permits her to tire the reader, she cannot be supposed to tire herself or tire